How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Borderlines, a podcast for the discussion of Canadian immigration law. I'm Steve Murins. On June 7, 2022, Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship Canada announced that, quote, the Honourable Sean Fraser, Minister of Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship, announced enhancements to Canada's Super Visa program. These enhancements will make it easier for Canadians to reunite with their parents and grandparents in Canada and will allow Super Visa holders to stay for a longer period of time. These changes, which come into force on July 4, 2022, will, number one, increase the length of stay for Super Visa holders to 5 years per entry into Canada, and number two, allow the Minister of Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship to designate international medical insurance companies to provide coverage to Super Visa applicants in the future. The press release also contained quotes from Minister Fraser about the benefits of the policy that he was enacting, as well as a quote from the Minister of Public Safety, Marco Mendicino, who is the former Minister of Immigration, also stressing the importance of these measures. What the press release did not say was that these policy enactments were simply enacting through policy a private member's bill that was submitted by Conservative Member of Parliament Kyle Seaback. In fact, about a month prior to the June 7 press release that IRCC did, Marie-France Lalonde, the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Immigration, told the House of Commons Standing Committee on Citizenship and Immigration that the Government of Canada opposed allowing super visas to be purchased from, or super visa insurance, rather, to be purchased from foreign countries, and that the government only wanted to increase the length of super visas from 2 years to three. My guest today is Kyle Seaback, the Member of Parliament who introduced Bill C-242, which was the bill to increase the length of super visas from 2 years to 5 years and allow IRCC to designate international medical insurance companies to provide coverage to super visa applicants. His bill also called on the government to report to Parliament whether it was possible to reduce or eventually abolish the low-income requirement for super visa applicants, for the sponsors of super visa applicants. Mr. Seaback and I discuss the contents of his bill, whether he thinks the government would have made the changes that it did without his bill, and other immigration issues that his constituents have. Mr. Seaback can be reached on Twitter at Kyle Seaback, K-Y-L-E-S-E-E-B-A-C-K. If you liked the show and today's episode, please leave a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And I hope you enjoy today's episode. Maybe first you can describe a little bit about who you are and why you became a member of parliament.
Well, I'm one of those guys who wanted to be a member of parliament for a really long time. And I got started in politics when I was 14 years old. My dad, at the time, he had done some stuff locally, raised some money locally for former Premier Bill Davis. So he was a progressive conservative. And when Premier Davis retired, there was a nomination meeting to replace him. And one of my dad's good friends was running in the nomination, Peter Robertson, who at the time was a city councillor in Brampton. So I went to the nomination meeting at 14, took out a membership, was just enthralled by the process. Nominations back then were different than now. They're kind of grand events. And, you know, there were people wearing hats and buttons and signs and all kinds of things going on. And I thought it was pretty cool. Peter Robertson, interestingly enough, was in first place on the first ballot. And back then it wasn't preferential. You had to come back to vote. First place on the second ballot, first place on the third ballot, and second place on the final fourth ballot. I was hooked. And so from that point on, I would say to people, you know, one day I'm going to be a member of parliament. Didn't know the distinction at the time. He was actually running for MPP, but that's okay. That's how it all started for me.
And you're currently the member of, I want to make sure I pronounce it properly, Dufferin Caledon?
Yes, Dufferin Caledon.
Dufferin Caledon. And which is it all of Brampton or it's part of Brampton?
No, none of Brampton.
None of Brampton.
I was the member of parliament for Brampton West. That's where I was elected in 2011. Defeated in 2015, and now I'm the member of parliament for Dufferin Caledon. It borders on Brampton,
okay.
So it's the adjacent riding, but very different. You know, it's a large geographic riding, predominantly rural.
Predominantly rural. And how then did the topic of super visas come to interest you? Do you have a lot of constituency interest?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Brampton is a very multicultural place. I was born and raised there, was a member of parliament there. And, you know, we brought in the super visa in 2011 when we were the government, and I was a member of that, of the Conservative Party when we were the government. So I thought it was a great idea then. And over time, though, you know, I would hear about some of the challenges with the super visa. And that's been my experience. And interestingly enough, there's a large new Canadian community that's moving into my riding all the time. It's getting bigger and bigger all the time. And I heard about this on the 2019 campaign trail, talking to people about it. And so part of my idea, so this idea I had to improve the super visa, part of it actually made it into our platform in the last election, which was extending it from 2 years, the amount of time you could stay from 2 years to 5 years.
And was that something you had raised with Aaron O'Toole at the time or whatever the team that was drafting policy?
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote a little paper on some issues, including immigration issues. And one of my recommendations was to enhance the super visa.
I think I had read that this was your first private member's bill.
Yeah, it is. Private members' bills, everyone can submit a private member's bill, but there's actually a lottery system to determine when your private member's bill will be dealt with by Parliament. Mm-hmm. So in the previous Parliament, I think my number was something like 278. So I never got reached to introduce one. I could have, of course, introduced one, but I knew it wouldn't actually come before Parliament, so I chose not to. But this time I got pretty lucky and I got the number two draw in this parliament.
And do you have to have your legislation proposed in advance or is it just the names of MPs that are part of the lottery?
No, just the names. There's a lottery for all 338 MPs and you get a number from 1 to 338.
Oh, okay. And when you introduce a private member's bill, does like the leader of the opposition in this case have to vet it, or does it become like what would be, it would become almost CPC, a conservative bill?
Yeah. So, you know, when you come up with the idea, you then work with the Library of Parliament to get it drafted properly, which I did. And then I submitted it to, at the time, our shadow minister for citizenship and immigration, which was Jasraj Halan.
Yeah.
And Jasraj then looks at it. And at the time, he was in shadow cabinet and I was not. And so then it goes through shadow cabinet. They look at it and decide, you know, is this a bill that we think is good? Caucus gets to, you know, weigh in their opinions on it. And then the shadow minister is going to, you know, make a recommendation. Of course, they recommended to proceed and support this bill.
Did the change in leadership from Aaron O'Toole to the current leader impact it? Or is that the leadership race kind of separate from the private members bills?
So it was introduced when Aaron was still the leader. I don't remember exactly when that was, but I think I had to table my bill sometime in January or February. I can't remember the exact date, but there's a time frame for that. You have to, if your bill isn't submitted by that time, you've lost your slot. So I had to get it done by then. So it was end of January, start of February that I submitted my private member's bill. I had to start working on it right after the election, pretty quickly, because they had the draw and you're number two. I knew that I had to be ready in January. Parliament came back, I think, the end of November or something. So I had very little time to put this bill together.
Yeah. And so let's get into the substance of the bill. When I read it, it seemed to do three main things. And the first, and I actually, until I read the committee testimony, I thought the most significant was increasing the amount that someone could stay from 2 years to 5 years. Why was that important to you?
Well, so for me, I have a large Indo-Canadian community in my riding, and it was the same in Brampton. And I know this isn't how the super visa works. I know that you can come for five entire years and stay with what my bill proposes. And before it was 2 years, you could apply for extensions. But in the Indo-Canadian community, it's not uncommon for parents or grandparents to come for around 4 or 5 months. They come for the summer months. Then they want to go, you know, back home where they have, you know, other family and other, you know, social circles. So when I looked at the time frame, I sort of said, you know, 4 to 5 months a year, that's a good range. So 5 years.
No, and what I like about it also is that a theme that I've raised a couple times is it minimizes the amount of interactions and applications that people have to file. And I'm sure your office is aware that how big the backlogs are.
And yeah, absolutely.
Just so anything that reduces the number of applications that go in seems to be a good thing.
Yeah. So it reduces the number of times you have to apply to renew. That's a great thing. Number two, it also gives you that flexibility of that 5 years. If you were there, for example, and one of your children had a couple of children, or you have several children here who are each having children, it's so great to have a parent or grandparent there, not only just to celebrate that, but of course, to help with that. It really gives families, to me, so much more flexibility having 5 years than two.
Yeah. The other change that it introduces is that it lets the minister designate health insurance companies from outside of Canada to provide the health insurance coverage to super visa holders. So, and in your testimony to the committee, you noted that it can cost someone in their early 70s with no pre-existing medical condition anywhere from $1,700 to $4,600 a year, which I didn't, I knew the coverage was expensive. And that's why I think that this actually might be as big a deal to super visa holders.
Yeah, the cost issue is a huge one. And it also, the 5 years is also part of my calculation, the cost, because flying back and forth is also expensive. Mm-hmm. So you've got flying back and forth, which can be expensive. You have the health insurance, which can be expensive, all of which are barriers to someone having their parent or grandparent come and spend time with them. So my goal in this bill was to reduce those barriers as much as possible. Yeah. And hopefully, foreign insurance companies will create competition, which will lower price. That's the goal.
Yeah. And hopefully that does happen. And the last part of the bill was requiring the immigration minister to prepare a report to Parliament, or at least as part of the minister's annual reports to Parliament, on reducing the low income threshold for parents and grandparents.
Yeah, this one is big as well. And to me, and I said this at committee, we're approaching this in the wrong way. You know, we look at this and say, oh, well, bringing a parent or a grandparent here, this is a financial burden. And therefore, the host family has to have a certain amount of income in order to support that parent or grandparent coming here. And what I've learned in the course of, you know, researching my bill is that it's, of course, the exact opposite. What they actually contribute to the economic success of the family here in so many ways. You know, the examples I've cited are maybe it allows, you know, one of the children here to take an extra shift at work because, you know, they've got a parent or a grandparent there that can, you know, watch the children. They can also provide some daycare services and therefore save some money on those costs. And the other thing that I raised at committee when I was asking some questions earlier this week is, you know, the diaspora remittance back to the home country, which is incredibly significant. Having a parent or grandparent here in many cases will mean that that money stays here as well. So yeah, all of it is actually an economic boon to the family and to Canada.
Yeah. And I don't know if the daycare situation is as dire in Ontario as it is in British Columbia, but it's like expensive and hard to get spots in daycare. So certainly, at least my perspective is, yeah, having the parent or grandparent here is almost, I mean, it's just one, it allows both parents to go back to work, kind of, as you noted, that it's not really a cost.
100%. And in so many communities, in so many cultural communities, putting your child in daycare isn't really a great option. You know, my experience is highly with the Indo-Canadian community, because those were the largest group in both my ridings. They're not big fans of institutional daycare. They would much rather have their children raised in their home. Yeah. And this is a big plus for them.
And I mean, it's a bit of a different topic, but as the complaints that you heard about the super visa with the low income requirement, did you also hear about the for sponsoring parents and grandparents to immigrate?
Well, I think, you know, I think the challenge that we have with that in Canada is that the intake number that is set through immigration levels is so much lower than the number of people that actually want to come here. So it's really challenging to design a system that doesn't either develop massive backlogs. We had massive backlogs in that immigration category when the Conservative Party took over as the government in 2006. And now they've tried a lottery system. They've tried a, you know, enter your code into the computer first system, both of which have those spots fill up, I think, in under 5 minutes. So yeah, that part of our immigration is exceptionally challenging, and I think very frustrating for a lot of Canadian families.
Yeah. And it also has its own unique, like for sponsoring, for the super visa, it's meeting the low income requirement, and then permanently sponsoring, it's the low income requirement plus 30%, although that's been reduced during COVID. But anyway, so what was interesting about your private member's bill, as someone who's watched the Immigration Committee closely over the last 10, 12 years, is, and when I actually reached out to your office to have you on, it hadn't occurred to me that it would become policy, because I can't recall a private member's bill ever becoming policy. Like Don Davies of a Burnaby MP for the NDP would propose, kind of, you see the same private member's bills all the time. and they're not acted upon. So when you proposed yours, did you think, like, what did you expect the bill, how did you expect the bill to wind through the system?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess I'll say two things. You know, first of all, imitation is the finest form of flattery. So I'm flattered that they decided to issue ministerial instructions to cover a lot of what's in my bill. But initially, it seemed like there was going to be some opposition from the Liberals. I remember in the speeches in the House of Commons, the parliamentary secretary seemed to indicate issues with the term of 5 years and definitely issues with insurance from a foreign country. So, and that seemed to be the witnesses that they were bringing to committee as well, witnesses that were very critical of that. And also, so I was very surprised when they decided to proceed with ministerial instructions to take up those two parts of my bill.
Yeah, I felt the same. Like, I watched the and then read the testimony of the civil servants who spoke, and they, you know, strongly implied that it was either the bureaucracy's position or the government's position that 2 years was sufficient, and they didn't have the capacity or expertise to look into foreign health insurance providers. And I noticed that
there's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
While the Liberal MPs, I wouldn't say were openly hostile to what was being proposed, their questions suggested skepticism. And then a week later, two of the three aspects were enacted through ministerial instruction. Did you know that the minister was going to enact it?
No, I didn't. I had a brief conversation with the parliamentary secretary to the minister on Tuesday, where she said that she indicated that the minister might be proceeding with ministerial instruction. And then a few hours later, it was announced. So, I mean, I wouldn't say I really had a heads up on that. But I did want to just touch back on what you mentioned, their criticism of foreign insurance companies. It's one of the things that I found really curious, that the department could say, so they could accredit doctors all around the world that you can go and see for your health, to get your certificate that you're in good health, right? They could approve doctors all over the world, but they can't approve a few insurance companies. It just, like, the lack of common sense in putting that out was kind of astounding.
Yeah, I was surprised at that. I was also surprised. Well, what really surprised me was when the Canadian Immigration Lawyers Association, which is a newly formed group that represents immigration lawyers, that they opposed the increase from 2 years to 5 years because it would encourage people to. I mean, their concern was that it would encourage people to apply for permanent residence on humanitarian and compassionate grounds, which I thought was puzzling coming from that organization. And then the ministers, like IRCC, seemed to hint that increasing the maximum stay from 2 years to 5 years could cause issues with someone's intent, which also didn't really make sense to me, because you can get work permits in certain categories for up to 5 years.
But also what they kept saying is, you don't, like, it's amazing to me how they sort of would say things to criticize the bill, but then through that criticism show that there was nothing wrong with the bill. So for example, to say that 5 years is too long, but then say, but you can apply for two, you get two, and then you can keep applying for these extensions,
yeah,
1 year extensions. So you could stay for five. Okay. So let's exactly. just make it five.
And that goes to my, what I was saying earlier about right. like, why are we making people always apply?
Pay right. an so application let's just, yeah, fee. Let's just make it five. And, yeah. and you know, Bob's your uncle, but sometimes look, I think that in general, bureaucracy doesn't like change. And because change requires a whole bunch of different systems, different ways of doing things. And I just think there's a lot of inertia in bureaucracy to keep doing things the same way. And I think that's the number one way they look at things when it's brought to them.
And one question that people raised during committee was, well, why can't we do this through ministerial instructions? Which begs the question why they didn't. Do you think it would have happened without your bill making its way through committee?
No, absolutely not. No, it would not have happened. My bill was absolutely the catalyst. And I think they initially opposed it. They were opposing it, but they're voting for it to get to committee, I think, so they could make changes to it. But I think they started hearing from people. And I think they started hearing how popular this was. I know I campaigned on this locally in the last election. When I would meet with groups of people from cultural communities, I would say, look, if I'm reelected and I get a private member's bill, I'm going to enhance the super visa. And I would tell them what my plan was. And they would say, that's fantastic. So I think they started to realize how popular this was and how sort of offside with opinion they were, and decided just to, you know, do a 180.
Yeah. The one aspect that I don't think was enacted through ministerial instructions was the report to Parliament on reducing low income. Do you have any idea why that wasn't part of the ministerial instructions, or are they just going to do that separately?
Yeah, I don't know that you can do that as part of ministerial instructions. But my thought on ministerial instruction is this, you know, I guess the plus of a ministerial instruction is if they want to, they can act faster than legislation, which is true because my legislation's been, you know, working along for 5 months and they just did the ministerial instructions. That's the good part of it. The bad part of it is ministerial instruction can be changed just as quickly. So they could decide that, you know, this is too much work to do the insurance stuff. And yeah, actually, now that we thought about it a little more, we don't like 5 years. So that's the risk on this. Once it's legislation, you can only change it with legislation. Yeah. And the way I crafted the legislation, it kind of binds the minister's hands with respect to if there's ministerial instructions about this, it has to be this. So my belief is that my bill is still the far better and the superior way to go for Canadians.
And you mentioned that it passed committee?
It did, yes.
Yeah. How did the Liberals vote?
All against it.
All against. Yeah. It went down party.
Yeah, so I was able to get the support of the NDP and the Bloc Québécois. So it's passed out of committee. The Liberals all voted against it, which, I don't know, makes sort of no sense to me. But yeah, they did. And I assume they'll vote against it in the House of Commons.
Yeah. The thing that I had also noted, and which I tweeted about, was also that the IRCC press release announcing that the super visa was going to 5 years and people could use international health insurance providers that are designated didn't mention at all that this originated from your bill.
Yeah, I mean, the minister did send me a note with a chocolate bar, which was a nice gesture that he sent through the lobby.
With a chocolate bar?
Oh, with a chocolate bar. So, you know, saying, you know, thanks for your hard work on Bill C-242. Look, I think on stuff like this, you should try and not be partisan. Yeah. And if they want to do this properly, I think they should have called me in and said, look, I think we're going to proceed by ministerial instruction. If we do, you know, will you abandon your bill? And, you know, we'll co-announce it and, you know, we'll both take credit for it. You know, that's something I would have seriously considered. But instead, they just sort of did the announcement, but sent me a chocolate bar.
Yeah. Well, and it's...
it was a good chocolate bar, though. Like, I got a...
what brand was it?
Actually, you know what? It was made locally in the minister's riding. It was delicious.
So it wasn't like a Kit Kat or a coffee crisp.
No. Yeah.
It's one of those things that I think like Canadians want to see political parties work together. And this is an example, not necessarily of working together, but at least of like showing that different members of parliament from different political parties could propose ideas that make their way into government. And I thought it, or into law or policy enacted. And it was a missed opportunity, I think, to show that. And it's one of the reasons that I'm glad we're doing the podcast, because then when it's announced, or when it was announced, most media also didn't pick up that it was your bill that originated it.
Yeah, so. we got CTV News to correct their story and put in about my bill. But I think most other news organizations, you know, chose not to.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know, like, unless they follow committee closely, how they'd know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. No, 100%.
Which is just, you know, it's unfortunate, but hopefully this podcast can at least serve to record that your involvement in this. And what, like, so you're just switching gears a little bit from Bill C-242. What other immigration issues is your office encountering now?
Well, you know, the processing times for everything is just off the charts bad, whether it's a, you know, whether it's a spousal sponsorship or, you know, a visitor visa application. It's not uncommon for us to, you know, have people calling in and saying, what's the status of my, you know, visitor visa application? And, you know, we say, oh, well, we've looked into it. It's within the new processing times. So, you know, call back in a month and a half and they'll say, but by then it's too late, right? Yeah. Like what I'm trying to come for will have happened. So I think that's a big challenge. And same thing with spousal sponsorships. We're dealing with many, many really, really difficult stories about families separated and the processing times being so bad.
And what role does your, this is a question we get asked all the time, is what role does an MP or can an MP's office play?
So, you know, there are certain circumstances, you know, that we can help, but they are limited. We don't have an unlimited ability to say, you know, CIC process this, right? Like we can follow up, aggressively to try and get movement on a file. Sometimes we're successful, sometimes we're not, but we really don't have the ability to magically solve files, unfortunately.
And when it comes to, say, like contacting the minister for a temporary resident permit or a minister's permit, is that, I mean, I don't like want, you know, anyone listening to all of a sudden be calling your office and asking if you can do this, but have you found that process? Because you've been an MP for under two governments.
Yes.
Three, I guess, if you count, or yeah, three, I guess, if you count the different incarnations of the current Liberal government. Has that process kind of changed, stayed the same? We've interviewed a few former immigration ministers who said their approach to working with MP, like each minister seemed to have their own approach to dealing with these requests from MPs. And I'm curious from your side, like, do you notice a difference minister to minister?
Well, yeah, I think all ministers have a different approach. Some ministers, you know, want to incredibly restrict ministers' permits, others not as much. I think it also depends on if you're in government or not. I think, you know, the chances of me getting a minister's permit were certainly better when it was a conservative government. And I could, you know, walk the file over to, you know, either whether it was Minister Kenny or Minister Alexander and say, look, here's the file and here's the reason why I think you should, you know, issue a minister's permit. It's a little more challenging when you're in opposition. But, you know, you can have success, but they have to be incredibly, incredibly mm-hmm. meritorious.
Yeah. And what is there, like, do you, you know, if you could wave a wand, would there be a, would you give it, like, should MPs, do you think, have a greater role in being able to, like, MPs being able to issue permits, or do you think the role now is sort of appropriate?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, that's a tough one. I think minister's permit should be issued by the minister.
Yeah.
I do think that there should be more opportunities to bring more cases to minister's office on these things, because there's a lot more, you know, meritorious cases, you know, out there than you think. It just made me think of, I remember one that I did get back when I was the Member of Parliament for Brampton West. It was a gentleman whose wife had passed away in childbirth and given birth to twins. And he had applied for a visitor visa for his mother to come and help him because he's got two newborn twins. His wife has passed away and the visa was rejected. And, you know, the minister, Minister Kenny issued the permit. And, you know, he came to my constituency office with his mom and his two kids, and, you know, he's just so grateful. And those are the great, great moments of this job.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to be able to help, you know, more people that are in, you know, circumstances like that.
Yeah. And it's, I think there's, especially right now, a lot more, well, just, I think the processing, like the way COVID, at least officially, the way COVID has impacted things has left thing like a lot of people in similar situations.
I think on visitors visas, and for me, my specialty really is India, but there's a difference between visitor visas processed in Delhi and Chandigarh. You know, Chandigarh is in Punjab, and the acceptance rate's somewhere usually around 50%. I think there has to be a long, hard look taken at that, because I think the thinking is, you know, 30 years ago. So the worry is far too much that the person, you know, will not return at the end of that visa. I think the risk is significantly lower than is being applied to the visas.
So you must then, if you're like, if that's the largest constituency in your riding that's facing immigration issues, get specific complaints about that visa office as well, about how it is way slower than other posts right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No, I think Parliament or the committee is also studying differential processing times right now. And I know that I think Canadian Bar Association is preparing a specific, like, what is going on at the visa offices in India right now.
I think there's just an issue in general with visa offices in the global south that has to be looked at and looked at very critically.
Yeah. No, definitely. This was great. Thanks. Thanks for coming on. I hope you're able to stay involved in immigration matters. And yeah, like, hopefully you get an early draw in the next in the next lottery. However, so they're annual, the lottery, or
no, it's per term of parliament.
Oh, okay. So it has to go through.
So this is it until parliament's dissolved. And there's a new election. And if I'm reelected, then, you know, I'll have another chance. Although, you know, so that's my big hope. I actually hope that my bill passes third reading in the House of Commons and then passes the Senate and becomes law. The Senate will be a bit of a challenge, I think, you know, given that the Liberals have a majority in there, although they say they don't. But it's going to pass the House of Commons, I'm quite sure. Hopefully it'll pass the Senate.
Who dictates the scheduling for when a private member's bill gets voted on in the House?
You know what? That's something that happens through the House leaders, although there's a certain amount of time from it coming from committee before it has to come for third reading. I don't know exactly what that is. I suspect that the Liberals are not going to, you know, quickly put this on on the vote calendar.
Well, we'll see. Hopefully, I support the bill, and I hopefully it does go through. I'm especially interested in that idea of removing the low income threshold, because it lowering. Does also or yeah. lowering. Yeah. Well, I think did you testify in committee though that eventually, like the ideal would be if.
Yes, you know. I said they should remove it.
Yeah,
I was asked my opinion on that, and I said yeah, they should remove it.
Yeah, and I think unless there's evidence that, you know, that what the social studies, I guess, seems to indicate, which is parents and grandparents coming, does not impose a burden on the state. Like I'm very intrigued at like the idea of being able to lower or remove that the low income threshold.
Well, that's a big part of why that's in my bill, that they have to prepare a report on lowering it, because I'm sure they'll include in that the research as to why they're barely lowering it or they're not lowering it, that kind of stuff. Because, you know, the department's been encouraged to do this research for at least 6 years and they haven't done it.
Thank you very much for coming on. And hopefully, you know, as the session progresses or in different private members' bill or future immigration minister bills, who knows, that we'll be able to have you back on.
That sounds great.
All right. Thank you so much.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.